Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
This is your Twisted Kings, Taylor Lewan and Will Compton. Summer is right around the corner.
Nothing is better than grabbing a refreshing Twisted Tea cold on the rocks. It's got 5% alcohol. It is the perfect drink to turn up your summer. And you might be wondering, is this a sponsored ad? Yes. But the truth is, the boys, we love Twisted Tea.
Dude,
go buy it, go drink it, drink responsibly, and tell your boys to buy it as well. Let's have ourselves a hell of a summer. Oh, don't be dumb, drink responsibly.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome back to Starting
Let's
Nine.
Go.
Episode 285. We're in the thick of it right now in the league championship series. It is fucking, what day is it? Monday. Last night, we saw game two between the Braves and the Dodgers. What did you have? Dodgers in five?
Nope. Did not have Dodgers in five. I believe it was now Dodgers in six. Yep. Dodgers in six is what I had.
Dodgers in six is the adjusted pick. We've got a split series in the American League Championship Series between the Boston Red Sox and the Houston Astros. Now had it back to Fenway Park, but I feel like coming off back-to-back walk-off wins, which the Red Sox did in the division series. We got to start here. We got to start with the Bravos and the Dodgers, who I want to get into the game action. We'll break that all down in a second. I wanted to ask you this first, though. How do you feel about the Braves having home field advantage in this series?
The rules are clearly stated.
Yeah. And I know. I'm just asking you how you feel about it.
Yeah. No, I like for that's at some point in time, like you have to understand this isn't gamesmanship. Or but like this is part of the game. This is how the game is laid out. Oh well, but the best is that's like game, fun game. Like doesn't always favor the best and the most efficient. And this is the part of hey, the Braves were in that division, and they won that division, and that didn't happen for the Dodgers. I don't care how many games they won. I don't care. They didn't win enough to win their division.
I didn't realize that the winner. The rules change, right? The rules change for the World Series. So let's say hypothetically it's Red Sox, Braves in the World Series. It goes to best winning percentage. So the Red Sox would have home field advantage as a wild card team against the division winner because they have the better winning percentage than the Braves.
Hang with them, and that and that's
the rules.
That's
the rules. Them's the rules, Dallas.
That's how it's drawn up. Like. Now you can talk about trying to shift that or not what, but that's part of the whole, like, hey, you know what, in this division here, I mean, that the conversation around the Chicago White Sox was just that all year long. We were talking about how many games are they going to play that mean anything? They're going to be quote unquote rewarded with a postseason trip. But when they get there, what's it going to look like because of what that division has been for them? It's been a feeding ground for them. They've gotten fat, and then they roll into the playoffs, you know, instead of like a lean, stealthy fighting machine. They're this fat, out of shape, overweight, heavyweight who's been lied to about how great they're going to be, steps into the ring, gets knocked around.
Yeah, it's not great. So we've got a series here. 2-0 in favor of the Braves, who took care of business at home against the Dodgers. Game two last night saw Max Scherzer come out there, and I mean, I'm sure you saw his quotes after the game. I don't think that it presents a huge issue going into game three, obviously, but if you've got Dodgers in six, you're going to need to see Max Scherzer again, and he's basically telling you he's gassed, and you can
Time out. He's not gassed. I can't let you say he's gassed.
Well, you're just going to have a semantics battle. Like, that's basically what he said. He did not use the word gassed. He said he was tired.
he's in that start, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing.
No, not if you're looking at the detail of where he's coming from. This is what people need to listen to when we tell you that the most important outs of the game are the last three, no matter when they come. Well, and throwing different.
Like, he's usually 96, and he was 92, 93. Like you could see it early, and it wasn't like an end of the start type thing. It was early that he didn't have the
sure, defense. Sure, because like the bullpen that he was throwing happened in the first time he's ever closed a big league ball game.
Correct.
In the postseason, so those last three outs that he recorded, those pitches that he threw. You can almost add by the factor of two or three
high intensity pitches, like
right? Like you throw 20 pitches, high intensity, high leverage, last three outs of a game. Like emotionally, adrenaline wise, what your body feels, you may as well have thrown 40 pitches. It's kind of what that body feels like after the fact, especially if you're not used to that. Because Max Scherzer isn't used to necessarily competing at game speed on that day. In that close of a window. He's pitched four times in the last 12 days.
Right.
He's a starting pitcher. He would pitch two times in a 10-day span. Four times in a 12-day span. So him closing a game in lieu of throwing a bullpen and then coming back, that's very different. It's quite literally the first time he's ever done that, right? Closed a ball game and correct. Then bounced back on short rest, or not short rest, but bounced back and started a game coming off a game speed type bullpen.
Yeah. So
I get what you're saying. Like he's tired, or he's telling you he's tired. What he's telling people or what he's saying out loud is, yes, I'm acknowledging that I've never done that. Yes. I'm acknowledging that, you know, we all know as pitchers, that's a different taxation on the body. That's just a higher tax rate. And I felt that. I felt that.
The tweet was, Max Scherzer said his arm is tired, feels dead, but believes he can be available again to start if the NLCS is extended. That's the quote.
Boom.
So I don't think I didn't take that as like, man, like I'm tired after that one start. It's like, here I am in the postseason after, I mean, you know, you mentioned the high intensity, high leverage and the effort that it takes. Like Max Scherzer is a max effort guy. We all know that. And he just put forth, as a 37-year-old, a Cy Young worthy season. Whether or not he wins it, we'll see. But it's worthy of winning the Cy Young Award, depending on what other guys do. It's not surprising to hear that, you know, you said four appearances in 12 days?
Yeah.
Four appearances in 12 days, 37 years old, coming off a Cy Young worthy season. And the four appearances in 12 days are in the postseason. And yeah,
and those last two, all I'm saying is off of that close for him coming back and starting, that's where this, in my opinion, that's where this dead arm has taken hold. That right there, that's you're asking a lot of him, and you're not asking this of the Max Scherzer 7 or 8 years ago. That's not who's doing this right now.
So that would, on regular rest, he would be ready to go for what, game 5?
I believe so. Because okay. Today's Monday. Today's Sunday. Monday,
so there would be
Tuesday.
Before 5, yeah. Yeah.
So it'd be 6. No?
Start 2, 3, 4, 5. With the off day, wouldn't that put him in line for?
It depends on no off day would bump him.
Either way, I mean, for whatever exhaustion that he was feeling, we talked about the decrease in velocity. Still pitched well enough to win the ball game. You obviously see the Jock Peterson Mammo Tank, which, you know, October rolls around, and that's a guy that can kick it into another gear, whether it's starting, whether it's off the bench as a pinch hitter. He's delivered for the Atlanta Braves in the postseason. And I'm sure that, you know, in talking to him, he came on starting 9 after the Dodgers won the World Series last October. I think he came on with us in November, December. you can sense that that's a guy that there will be guys in Major League Baseball who couldn't care less who they're playing against, if it is their former team, if it's the team that drafted them and whatever. And then there's guys that they can bump it up a little bit where it's like, yeah, like I'll show you, like you didn't want me back. Okay, here you go. Like, I feel like Jock Peterson falls into that category. Would you agree?
Yeah. He just like, I love his quote, what he was, you know, in response to him hitting the homer and, you know, what'd you see? What were you thinking? Blah, blah, blah. How's it feel? He was just like, you know, I'm pretty good player. put a good swing on it. You know, like just he's like not here for the semantics of the whole, like, I don't know. Jock just beats to his own drum. And there's something to a guy who can kind of just keep things at the same level in big spots, big moments. And how many at bats does he have this postseason?
I'd say, if I were to guess, 10. Does that seem light?
What's he have? Two homers?
Three
homers and a double, or just three homers?
Jock Peterson this postseason has uh, 14 plate appearances. He's got five hits. Three of them are homers. No doubles.
Yeah, Jock. It's Jocktober.
It's Jocktober. What did you just say?
Jocktober with a pearl necklace.
Yeah. How many starts has he made?
Who knows?
Three. Two? His last three games have been starts. But yeah, he's 5 for 14, which means he hasn't walked, only punched three times, three homers, and he's driven in seven runs in those six games, in which the Braves are 5-1.
Yeah, Jock, right smack dab in the middle of it. How about Seager? What an emotional roller coaster of a ball game for Seager.
Well, a guy like Corey Seager, he's been there, done that. People forget not only was he the NLCS MVP last year, but also the World Series MVP. And the Dodgers, coming off a loss, needed to pounce on Ian Anderson, and they beat it into the ground about Ian Anderson's first inning woes. He had like a 6 ERA in the first inning. Overall, his numbers look great. I would love to – I'm sure I could look that up, what his numbers would look like from the second inning on. I'm sure if he's got a sub four with his 6 ERA in the first, what type of pitcher he would look like if you take out the first inning. But Seager jumps on him for the 2-run homer in the first inning. And you go to that conversation with Snit, and I believe it was the third, when you had the pitcher spot coming up and it's 2-0. The Braves line up, you know, despite winning game one, hasn't really been thumping yet. They've been leaning on Austin Riley as they have been all year. And, you know, you look to that pitcher spot early and you're like, well, I think we want to send up a guy that can actually hit here. Thanks for the three innings, but we're going to pinch hit for you. Your day's over. You know, I think that Ian Anderson is a guy that had the first inning didn't happen, or the Braves respond right back in the first and it's 2-2 in the third, you're going to see him be able to give you a little bit more length. No?
Possibly. Yes. I would say in a tie ball game, maybe even within one, maybe, but maybe within one, you feel like you're pulling that trigger right on time again by bringing who came in, Jesse Chavez.
Yeah.
Because that, and that was to my point that I was making earlier the other day about the bullpen alignment. That's where, like, all right, Chavez, is that a guy that you feel like you can get solid length from when you're up? I didn't think so. And to their point, though, keeping it close, Chavez comes in, and then you turn it over to the rest of those guys, and you're just trying to match up, just trying to get outs, keep the score close, keep it where it's at. That's what they were able to do. So if you're Snit, you're looking at it saying, I made the right move at the right time. I got out of him what I could. early homer. Maybe things look a little different if that's not the case, because Atlanta came back and answered in the fourth. That's just how shit goes. I mean, they talked about Seager jumping on the first pitch too. That's what he hit. And to Ian Anderson's credit, tried to throw a wrinkle in there. Didn't just throw him a fucking fastball that he got ambushed on. He threw a backup slidra that got waylaid, but that is what it is. He tried.
I mean, the Jock homer went over the fucking chop.
But Seager, they bring Gratterall in, and Gratterall comes in blowing hundos again, just chundy biscuits everywhere. And just absolutely blew up, fucking, oh my God. Whose back did he blow up? Why am I blanking right now? Jesus.
When you immediately said, didn't he get a knockoff of it though? It was based
Yeah, it was a hit.
Was that Dansby?
Was it Dansby? It may have been. Either way, it was just a complete blow. But anyways, was it Dansby? Who bunted?
It was a righty. I know it was a righty. The bat completely blew up, and it was a base hit up the middle.
But they get the runner on. Then they bunt, and Gratterall throws a 1,000-mile-an-hour stinker almost into center field. And who's there? Corey Seager, as calm as ever, gathers the short hop, gets the out at second. No big deal. Keep rolling. And then they got to go to Kenley, right? Got to go to Kenley. So they go to Kenley, and that doesn't work out.
No, it doesn't.
Ball back up the middle. Seager can't handle it, and the fucking Braves walk it off again. And remember, this is after they brought in Julio Urias, who came in and promptly gave it up after Trinan. I think Trinan came in and walked a guy, right?
Yeah, I think I saw a bunch of Braves fans complaining about, like, why was Urias in this game and blah, blah, blah. I mean, if it worked out, it's such a hindsight's 2020 thing. If it worked out, then you're just saying, like, Dave Roberts did it again. He's managing the bullpen by bringing in starters. And, like, how many people would have complained with Julio Urias on the mound at any point in 2021? The guy's been nails. And at some point, you just got to tip your cap. I mean, it's fucking Austin Riley. Like, Austin Riley has been that dude all year. And in this series, he's got a game-tying homer. He's got a walk-off hit. And then he has the game-tying hit in game two. Like, the guy has been outstanding. And, you know, it's a lefty-righty matchup. Under no circumstances should you be questioning Dave Roberts or coming at Urias for the result of that bat, where it wasn't even like a bloop. He fucking stung it to the wall. If you can get over the head of Mookie Betts, who is out there in center, you got some good wood on that. Just got to tip your cap, tie baseball game, and you keep it moving. But I know that, like, we've talked about this earlier in the season when Kenley had that stretch where he was not performing well for, like, whatever it was, week and a half, 2 weeks. And they're so quick to jump on this guy. And for the large predominant bulk of not just his career, but specifically this season, Kenley's been great. And you put him into a situation where that's not his fucking base runner. Like, he came into a spot where it's like, all right, we need you to help us out. Like, get us out of this jam. You know, you get a leadoff base hit, runner moves over, and we get a runner in scoring position. We need you here, Kenley. And, you know, it bleeds a little bit out over the plate to a lefty. You got that cut action on there, which he's known for. And again, Rosario, tip of the cap. It should have been, I don't know that I would have said it should have been an out. It's not like an easy play, but it could have been an out for sure.
I think it should have been an out.
I mean, you're not going to charge an error on Seager.
I think he'll tell you it should have been an out.
Sure. But as a good defender, it's like, he's going to tell you I should have made that play for sure. But it wasn't an error.
Well, I mean, it wasn't ruled an error.
Right. Yeah. If you were the scorekeeper,
trust me, I've had extensive conversations with multiple scorers across the game about plays like this.
E6 from Dallas Braden.
No, it just the idea, what I'm addressing is the idea that you could ask 30 scores and get 30 different responses. Now, obviously, you're only going to get one of two answers, which is error or hit. But how they arrive at that determination could be very different and is likely very different. They don't factor in maybe some of the stuff that other folks factor in, like mechanics of a play and blah, blah. There's just a lot that goes into that conversation. But, what are you telling me that because he shifted, he isn't charged with the error? You telling me because he had to range to his right a few steps, it's an error or it's not an error?
It's a good point. If he's
because the idea is it's
if he's playing him straight up and that ball is hit to him in the same way, like standing at shortstop, is that an error?
Like the definition is to make an extraordinary effort. If you're making an extraordinary effort at the ball, at the play, to field the ball, then that's where the ruling starts to come in. Like, all right, I don't know. I feel like you had to make an extraordinary effort to get to that ball. And if he didn't have to and he missed it, well, then that's an error. Yeah, but if he had to take three steps and go to the backhand on a short hop and was trying to make a play in the hole and the quick runner out of the left side of the box, well, that's all getting factored into the scorer's decision.
Right. And that is an interesting question and an interesting way to look at it is that if they were playing Rosario straight up and that ball was hit to Seager at short, traditional shortstop, and he makes the play that he made, is that an error? I think yes.
Well, I mean, that's why I tweeted last night. Like, it's incredible the feeling, like, within a matter of 5 minutes, you go from like everybody, and that's the thing is I don't know how many people in the ballpark appreciate the play from Gratterall or from Seager fielding that ball from Gratterall. Like Brusdar Gratterall throws a million miles an hour with
to get the
heavy
second
heavy sink and run, yeah. And he threw that to Seager, who's on the move, and then has to break down and field a short hop to the backhand side, saving the baseball game. Because if not, runners at third base and a whole different story.
Correct.
Whole different story. So Seager saved the fucking game right there. And then 5 minutes later, pitching change, they bring their closer in, who ball gets hit up the middle, and Seager tries to put a glove on it, gets a glove on it, isn't able to corral it, game's over.
I can't remember. Was that the Gratterall play where he went to second? Was that a bunt attempt?
Yes, it was a bunt. Okay.
Yeah. If you were the pitcher in that situation, are you risking going to second there?
That's not a risk. That's my job. That's my play. I am anticipating that. That's exactly what you're anticipating.
So you're going to second there?
Fuck yes. Absolutely. I am geared up for that shit. Yeah, I am your first job. Look, this is the three things you absolutely must do as a big league reliever. Otherwise, you go sell fucking cars. Or you better throw 194. And there's guys that do that. But you better, one, come in spinning for strikes. Throw the breaking ball for strikes. Have to do that. Otherwise, they're going to line up your heater and you're going to be backing up bases. Or you're just going to be walking back to the dugout because the fucking game is over. So number one, come in spinning. Number two, you absolutely must control the running game. You must. Why? Well, because if they start taking second base and third base late in the ball game, now we get back to playing baseball like we do in the postseason. When the outs for runs really starts to matter, they'll give one up, meaning an out for a run if it's in the ninth inning, because the guy on the mound has allowed a fucking track meet to break out and he can't control the running game. He ain't gonna last long. So come in spinning, control the running game, defend your position. Why? Well, let's go back to that last point I just made. They're going to be trading outs for runs. That means they're going to be sacrificing outs or runs. They're going to be putting this ball in play. And if there's one individual I want that ball in the hands of late in the ballgame, it is not the third shortstop, second baseman, or first baseman, not even the catcher. It's that guy out there on the mound who could give a shit about PFPs 3 days before we break camp. I want him fielding that ball, and I want him airmailing it into center field. So if you can't defend your position out there as a big league reliever late in the ballgame, like I said, go sell cars. Or someone will tell you to go sell cars, because that's what's going to happen. So the play from Seager is massive, and it just gets quickly overlooked because you're like, okay, two outs, whatever.
Yeah. Yep. It's a great game. It's been a great series, despite the Braves being up 2-0. You would look at a 2-0 series lead and be like, oh, well, this, not necessarily this one's over, but there is clearly a team that has a handle on this series. And if you're actually sitting down watching these games inning by inning, it's been really fucking close. It's been really close.
It's been great baseball.
It's taken timely hitting, which obviously the Braves have been able to capitalize on that with back-to-back walk-off wins. And, you know, you can lean on a guy like Riley in game one, but to get that hit from Rosario to win it in game two.
Four knocks. Your boy got four knocks.
Yeah. Like, you don't want to get into, if you don't win it there, you don't want to get into a battle of the bullpens with the Dodgers. You don't want to do that.
But you know what? It kind of feels like, why don't we? Why don't we? With the way that things have been deployed right now, why don't we? You tell me why we don't want to get into a battle of the bullpens with the Los Angeles Dodgers, because we just did. And you want to know what we did? We just won the ball game. That's what
I mean, extras. I think the longer the game goes, the more it would favor the Dodgers.
Well, so that's depth. But what we're talking about here is jumping on these leverage spots. And if the starting pitching is going to be going the way it is, look, if you're the Atlanta Braves right now, if you're listening closely, Max Scherzer just told you basically that if we don't win with Walker Buehler on the mound, I've told you how I'm feeling right now, and you've seen how things have gone. We've tried to trick fuck them as best we could by holding Urias back, not even in the first or the second, but running him out there later and giving him a four-inning window in the middle of the game. Like, that guy won 20 ball games, and we're not even starting him. And now we've deployed him in a situation where maybe we didn't even think we would be deploying him in. So now that bullpen that you're super scared of, justifiably so, is kind of to show, like, hey, you know what? If they're going to get ran out there where they're having to cover a guy like Max Scherzer, who's made four appearances in 12 starts, or who's made four appearances in the last 12 days, they've got Urias, who is being held back with an opener in his outings, and then getting run back out 3 days later, 2 days later after his outing for, like, there's just a lot going on there. There's a lot going on right now.
Yeah. You wouldn't go as far as to have labeled game two a must win for the Dodgers because they're going back home.
Game three?
Yeah. No. I'm saying game two because now, because they are going back home, game two wasn't necessary. I mean, game two is a must win for the Red Sox, I feel like, and we'll get to that series, but the Red Sox could not afford to go back to Fenway Park down 0-2 to Houston. I think the Dodgers, because of the way that they started the series game one, they didn't unleash the hounds. They go bullpen game. And if you have Walker Buehler going for you at home in game three, there is still life for this Dodger team. Like, I don't want to talk about this series like it's over just because the Braves jumped out to a 2-0 lead. There is still a path to the World Series for the Dodgers, but I almost feel like that's stating the obvious given the strength of their depth.
Well, that's there's still a path to the World Series for the Dodgers?
Yes.
Sure. But it is, and when I say sure, I don't even say sure with confidence because of what just transpired. Those losses, Jared, are heartbreakers. Like, when you get walked off like that, the clubhouse feeling is not that of a loss, a hard-fought loss 5-4 ball game. The last three outs were, you know, uneventful, if you will, and the game was over. That's not what happened. Like, it was, we got to win. We got to score. It's got to happen now. Like, those feelings of don't be the guy to give this up in that Dodger bullpen. Don't be the guy to kick the ball. Don't be the guy to give that, you know, like, that's the energy surrounding these two victories for the Braves and these two losses for the Dodgers. So you're going back home 0-2, but it's an 0-2 it's not a comfy 0-2 or an 0-2 that gives you confidence. Like, that plane flight back home was not one of loosey-goosey, but if it was, that's fake. It was probably a plane flight of, we better get our shit together here because we've got 3 days here at home to figure it the fuck out.
And they can figure it out because they've got Walker Buehler going in game three against Charlie Morton, who he's got a postseason pedigree of his own. Walker Buehler, been there, done that. He's had some ups and some downs in the postseason, but he's a dominant postseason starter. Charlie Morton, same ilk. Where do you see the series going, Dallas, now that it's back in L.A.? Crowd's going to be rocking.
If the Dodgers are going to, like, I could honestly see this. If the Braves win, I could see the Braves winning now in five. And if it's going to go to the Dodgers, it's going to have to go seven, it feels like, just with the manipulation of the arms. Don't let the fucking Braves, don't let Freddie Freeman figure out that he's Freddie Freeman. Mm-hmm. Because the minute that Freddie Freeman wakes up and realizes he's Freddie Freeman again, you're fucked.
Yeah.
that's not good for anybody. Like, yeah. Freddie Freeman is going through the worst swing and miss stretch of his career, I feel like, right now.
It is.
Just the worst possible time for it to happen. And his team is up 2-0 in the NLCS. You let Freddie Freeman start putting bat to ball, buddy, that's gonna be problems.
What are we talking about after
I just told you
after game three, what are we talking about here?
Well, siding with my pick, and just because I am a man of integrity, mm-hmm. I would tell you this is a must win, and I'm saying must win because of what Max Scherzer told you. Like, if we're confident that we can win ball games with the right guys on the mound and you're only as good as the next day's starter, and our next day's starter is Walker Buehler. Like, if I told you I got dead arm and Walker Buehler is without a doubt our next best option here, well, if we don't win that ball game, then what do you think our odds are if you're Max Scherzer, right? Like, that's kind of how I'm looking at it. Like, Max is telling you he's barking a little bit, arm's a little tired. And Walker Buehler has got to come and not save the day, but he has got to get us in the left-hand column. Got to get us in that W column. And if it fucking doesn't happen now, trouble.
Game three, Tuesday night, 5:00 Eastern on TBS. I'll be watching that game with a little bit of New Amsterdam vodka, because New Amsterdam vodka was born from an uncompromising passion for great vodka. Oh. The commitment to excellence enabled New Amsterdam to produce vodka of superb taste and unparalleled smoothness. New Amsterdam is a premium 80-proof vodka made from some of the finest quality grains from America's heartland. It's 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness and filtered 3 times for a clean, crisp finish. New Amsterdam vodka is slightly sweet on the palate, smooth enough to drink on the rocks, and mixes well with juice and soda, or make a classic New Amsterdam mule. New Amsterdam vodka is the official vodka of Barstool Sports. New Amsterdam vodka, check them out. Head on over to your local liquor stores, grab yourself a bottle. Dallas, the ALCS is tied 1-1. Headed back to Fenway. After I get off with you, I'm going to go fucking take a shower, I'm going to do my hair, pick up my jacket. Brand new, by the way. Brand new jacket. I'm going to pick up my parents because we have tickets in Section 10 tonight, but we also have the seats that I've been getting, and my mom is my lucky charm. So my dad is actually going to sit in Section 10 by himself because he refuses to sit with me because I'm telling him that I'm not superstitious, but he's like, yes, you are. And I know that you want to take your mom because she's 3-0 in the postseason. So you sit with her and I'll go sit in Section 10 by myself so that these tickets don't go to waste. So
you understand, and you know, you're still, I want this on record. You're still taking him. Let's start here. Let's just start here. This is as simple as it can be.
Yeah.
Will you be arriving at Fenway as a group, as a trio?
Yes.
Okay. That's all we needed to know. So you will indeed be taking your dad to this game.
Correct. I'm okay. Picking him up. I mean, my dad's not unlucky. It's just that my mom is lucky for this run. Like, I've been with my dad for some of the greatest postseason games of all time. We actually, the anniversary was yesterday, game 4 of the 2004 ALCS against the New York Yankees, the Dave Roberts steal game, David Ortiz walk-off homer against Paul Quantrill. I would still argue the greatest game ever played at Fenway Park. I was with my dad for that game, but it just happens to be that my mom saw the World Series clincher in 2013, game 6, and she saw the 2 walk-off wins against Tampa. So until she sees a home loss, that's when I would probably switch it up. That's the one thing that I think I've gotten from this job here at Barstool Sports. When, like, growing up for Red Sox playoff games, I would always sit in the same seat with my dad if we weren't at the game. And then you get this job and it's like, all right, we need you here for the stream. We need you to be at the game. We need you to fly out to LA. We need you to do this and that. And we're going to be doing a live stream from the bar across the street. Like, there's no time. There's no wiggle room to develop superstitions because you've just got to be in different places at different times. So that part has eased my superstitions as it pertains to baseball, but they're still there a little bit.
If you watch the game, if you're a part of the game, they have to be there.
Yeah.
It matters. I'm just curious. I mean, it's like you're saying, all right, we're going to sit in the same spots, but we'll let somebody else sit here too, but they're going to sit over there. But everything is the same. We're keeping everything the same, but we're changing it up, but it's the same.
My dad being there is, like, he's going to sit in Section 10. Like, Ellen will still be with me in the field box seats.
I don't want the hands up, like, what happened, curious look on your face if things don't work out tonight.
No, that won't happen.
Okay.
I'll have the jacket, I'll have Ellen, and I'll have the field box seats. So we'll see what happens.
Probably Patriots players should probably put that jacket away.
Yeah, I don't. I didn't.
Probably.
I'm not going to say I didn't care for it, but I just was like,
well, and then after
ask for permission, I feel like,
and then after a once proud franchise got absolutely fucking worked by Dak and them boys at home, like, you can't.
I don't know if they got worked, but
no, they did. They absolutely lost that football game.
I think it was Damian Harris.
They got worked.
That wore the jacket, and he scored the first touchdown of the game.
Right. That's what I mean, like, a once proud franchise. Like, think about the New England Patriots. Did you ever think that they would find themselves in the red zone and they're like, all right, here's what we do. We take our quarterback off the field. We put him way over there like a fucking wide receiver. That's, man, you hate to see the fall from grace, like an offensive coordinator of that franchise thinking, here's our best shot is getting our quarterback the fuck out of here. That's unfortunate, but it is.
As much as I loved the New England Patriots run, it was fun. I mean, I watched just about every single game of Tom Brady's career. I couldn't care less that they're bad now. Like, all those people that, like, there are people in Boston that they're sports fans, and, like, they are veiled football fans. They were tricked into thinking that they're football fans. They're really just winning fans. So those people are going to find themselves coming right on back to the Red Sox because this was a baseball town. Back in 2004, baseball town. And now that the Patriots stink, come on back to Fenway. We're going to be good for a long time with Chaim Bloom up there in his ivory tower. Yep. Can't wait.
JD, foot's looking decent. How's your wheel, bud? How's your flat tire? All fixed up. Good to go. Thanks.
Doing pretty good. Two swings, seven runs.
Take it.
In the division series. And I said that, I tweeted this the other day. I was like, I really hope that it doesn't get buried, the narrative that JD has the two biggest home runs of the postseason, because at the time, they were the biggest swings of the game. But the Red Sox went on to just add a shit ton of runs after the fact. Like his three-run home run in, I believe it was game two. Yeah, game two in Tampa. That was a three-run homer to give the Red Sox an 8-5 lead at the time. But the Red Sox went on to score 14 runs on 20 hits that game. And then you have game two of the ALCS in Houston. He hits a grand slam in the first inning. Red Sox go on to score 9 runs that game, and it was virtually stress-free.
Virtually? Did the little threat at the end? No. Nah. Just nothing?
No. Nah. I mean, like, Darwin's and Hernandez giving up two bombs. I mean, like, that dude is not in the game ever if the Red Sox don't score 9. So.
Is he in a game where the Red Sox are losing 2-0 early?
No.
What about 4-0 early before the fourth?
No. I don't think you see Darwin's in any game that's not mop up.
Okay. Just asking.
He's just too erratic. I mean, he can be dominant at times. Like, he's like a left-handed Joe Kelly a little bit, where Joe Kelly is obviously better, but you hope that he strikes out the side before he walks in a run.
Well, that's not ideal when you're talking about
the roster, and then he made the roster. So, I mean, like, you're talking about like the bottom of the bottom depth chart bullpen option. And that's the guy that gave the Astros a little bit of confidence coming off a loss, because Bregman was talking about it, and he was like, yeah, you know, like, we're happy with our performance. We scored 5 runs. And it's like, yeah, well, 2 of those runs didn't even fucking count, dude.
You confident in E-Rod?
Yes and no. He all year has been an every other start guy. It's just been like shit, great, shit, great, shit, great. And he pitched the clincher against Tampa in game 4, and he gave you 5 innings, and it was everything that you needed from him, which means that this would be the shit start. But who knows? I mean, he's definitely a dude that he knows he's pitching for a contract. I know that he loves pitching at Fenway Park in front of those fans, and I know that he's become a guy that is cognizant of the ballpark that he pitches in. So he will pitch to the ballpark that he's in, aka Fenway Park, being able to navigate hitters so that he's not giving up wall scrapers and moon bombs over the Green Monster. He's one of those guys. The way that the Astros pitching lines up the rest of the way, it doesn't bode well for Houston. Like, Zach Greinke hasn't started a game since September 19th. And he was garbage when he did. And like, this is a guy that's been battling the neck injury for what, 6 weeks now.
This was always, I told you that I felt like this was always going to be a bullpen series. And it was just about, that's why I chose Alex Cora and the Red Sox, was because I just felt like maybe, just maybe, he would be able to navigate his resources a little more efficiently and might be able to get a little more out of them than maybe Dusty Baker could. Take the over in all of these games. Feel like that over's hit.
Over has hit.
Because if you don't get 5-6 innings from Eddie, that doesn't help the Red Sox bullpen.
Well, it doesn't help the bullpen. It's just that it changes the course of the rest of the series.
Well, we got 3 days in a row.
Let's just say,
3 games in a row.
Well, I'm saying, yes, that's what I'm saying is – if you get worst case scenario, let's say Eddie goes 3 1/3, now you're going to call on Nick Pivetta to to come out of the bullpen.
But he's supposed to be starting game four.
Ideally, correct. Nick Pivetta should be your game four starter. But these are all scenarios that I know the Red Sox have thought of in advance. Like there's a plan for if Eddie goes deep, and there's a plan if he can't give you length. So I don't think the Red Sox are going to get caught with their pants down here if one scenario happens or the other scenario happens. I would be more concerned if you're Houston, because you know, it's like you're already limited in terms of your starters, and you're even more limited in your backup options. Your, oh fuck, my guy can't go more than an inning. Now what do we do options? Like, I feel better about the Red Sox backup options than I feel about the Astros backup options.
Well, I mean, like, whether you're calling them backup options or just like they're the arms that they have at their disposal.
Like a Jake Odorizzi, for example.
Thank you for bringing that up. That is quite possibly the most difficult scenario to come into in the history of Everdom. Like, you're cold. You're a starter. And you're now being asked to get hot in a very different fashion. I need you to go through your throwing routine out there on the game mound. I need you to get ready, stretch around. All that out there. What? And you have the pressure of everybody watching you. You have the pressure of you're feeling like, all right, let's go. Let's get this thing going. Like, are you not ready? Can you not fucking, come on. And I said this. The Red Sox got a long look at Jake Odorizzi playing catch, at his arm action, at his release. And you might think that that's not a big deal. That is a huge deal, because we're talking about timing. We're talking about hitters being able to create a window of a line of sight that they're going to be looking at. Anytime you can feel your opponent, you want to be able to do that. You would like to be able to do that. And that's what Jake Odorizzi warming up on the game mound like that does for you. In his game of catch, you're watching how the ball's coming out. Then he gets on the mound and he's starting to throw his entire pitch mix, right? Because this isn't him coming in between innings. He gets his eight pitches and then goes. No, he's going to work some fastballs to the arm side, some fastballs inside, some breaking balls, some changeups. Like, there's a lot going on there. And the Red Sox had a front row seat to all of it. Every fucking hitter there was watching every bit of that unfold. Guys standing in the on-deck circle. It's just free peaks all day long. And then Jake comes in and gets touched up. Right? Walk, gave up a couple runs.
Yeah, I mean, the bat to Devers specifically is the one that comes to mind, because the end result was a grand slam. But, and I've already talked about this before, the breakdown that they did on MLB Network about Devers and how the forearm injury has forced him to be more selective at the plate, because it looks like he's in the most amount of pain when he's swinging out of his ass. So if you're more selective at the plate, you're going to get a pitch to hit. And there was a pitch that Odorizzi threw to Devers that was like 93 middle, a little bit down. And he took it. And I was like, fuck. That was the pitch. Like, and then you're thinking, like, no disrespect to Jake Odorizzi, but you're thinking like the second inning of a playoff game, it's like you might get one pitch to hit per at bat, if that. And the pitch that Devers ended up cleaning out for the grand slam was up and in out of the zone. It wasn't even a strike. And to his credit, his hands are just so fucking quick that he was able to turn on it and keep it fair, because it was down the right field line there. But I really thought that he had missed his pitch. It was right down the fucking dick. And he just looked at it. And I was like, that is not good. Like, that is not a pitch that Rafael Devers traditionally would just be watching. So to go from that low point to where that at bat ended up, two grand slams within the first two innings of this baseball game, the first time that's ever happened in postseason history, two grand slams by the same team in the same game. Yeah, like you start to get the feeling of, you know, things are starting to swing in the direction. That's what was supposed to happen. If your starter gets knocked out in the first inning,
sure,
that's what's supposed to happen.
Well, that's what you would like to have happen. Is you like to start chipping away at a bullpen, and you'd like to, because you still are managing this thing if you're Dusty Baker with the future in mind. You don't want to just completely burn a guy out where you can't even utilize him for a couple of days. So you've got to start to figure out how you're going to spread out those 27 outs. How are you going to go get those things? And to have the blow up early and then have Odorizzi come in, stumble the way he did, like it put the Astros in a very, very tough spot. But if you're Dusty Baker, you're telling yourself, you know what? I still like our offense, and I'm not afraid of any of their starters either. I don't get scared with the idea that one of those guys are going to just shove it up our ass for seven strong innings, and then they're just going to easily hand it over to the bullpen. I don't think that's going to be the case either. So that's why I said, hold on to your hats this entire series. Take the over this entire series. These offenses are going to be banging. And it's just going to be about who can navigate all 27 outs the most efficiently.
I mean, it's the series is far from over. I know you feel good coming off that win and the fashion in which you won that game, the ballpark.
Don't let it get back to Houston, Jared.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel that way or no?
No. I picked the Red Sox in six, so I did anticipate having to go back to Houston before this thing started. But now that things have changed.
I believe Houston is a underappreciated home field advantage environment for a couple of reasons. One, the fans, but for the player psyche, the opposing player psyche. Because if you get there and you start to get touched up early, guys start to, you automatically, I think, go back to the cheating stuff and are like, is this happening again? Is this fucking happening?
I don't think that's going to happen with the Red Sox though. Like, they know that they've got Alex Cora in their dugout, and it's like, he knows all the tricks and the trades of what's been going
on. Oh, no. I'm not talking about like there being a real cause for concern. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about that just being a mental hurdle now, but it's real. And there doesn't have to be anything going on now because it already transpired. And that's how real the home field advantage is you're not thinking about what's going on when the Astros are beating your brains in at your home ballpark. You don't have that thought. You might, but probably not. But you go into Houston and you give up three runs in the first inning, whether anything's happening or not, which we don't believe so, you're probably going, fucking guys, see, fucking here we are here at home. I wonder what's fucking happened. And yeah. And now it's like, oh, you got to deal with that. And that's not a knock any longer. That's just the nature of the beast. The nature of what happened is playing the Astros at home now is a very different reality than it was in 2016, 2017, 2018. Because now there's an understanding of what happened. So this environment is very different. It's not just Minute Maid.
Yeah. I also don't love, I mean, I'm not saying that you should start someone in his place, but Eddie being a lefty and there's just so many good right-handed hitters in that lineup. You got Altuve, you got Bregman, you got Correa, you've got Gurriel that just won a batting title. Yeah.
I love watching Altuve against lefties at Minute Maid, honestly, because you can see him just like watch his front foot. He's going to be taking the entire outside part of the plate away. Fuck you. Whatever you're throwing out there, I'm duck hooking into this fucking Crawford box. It's like watching lefties against righties at Fenway.
Yeah. How do you see the rest of the series playing out?
Honestly, I mean, come on. We just had a team hit two grand slams in the same inning.
No. Right?
Same game, sorry. I that's why I said it's about the bullpen efficiency in this series. I think that the Red Sox have showed that they can compete with and they can bang with the Houston Astros. And if they get themselves out to a sturdy enough lead, I believe the Red Sox will match up effectively enough throughout the remainder of the game to win the series. I do believe that. But I believe that that's got to happen. Like, I think it's got to happen now. It's got to happen now. That's why I said I don't want this thing to get back to fucking Houston. I just don't.
I'm telling you, like, it should be 2-0 Red Sox. Like, that 3-1 lead in game one, like,
Hang with them.
And just the way that it happened, too. I mean, like, you know, you get the Kike homer in the ninth to make it 5-4. And were there different bullpen combinations that you could have gone to? They would have at least made it 4-4 going into extras, and who knows what would have happened there. It's all hindsight's 2020. I mean, I wasn't questioning any of the bullpen stuff like as it was happening. But there is definitely a way that the Red Sox could have snuck a victory in game one. But, you know, you take the split, you get out of Houston with the split, you come back to Fenway Park, and now you've taken home field advantage. You've got the next three in Boston to hopefully be able to get back to the World Series for the first time in 3 long years.
Wow. Has it been that long?
Mm-hmm.
Has it been that long? A little bit of news, not necessarily breaking news by any means, but I know some folks who are fans of a ball club that are in search of a general manager.
Oh, I see. A's, that. Oh, wow.
A's executive Vice President Billy Beane has withdrawn his name from consideration for the Mets earlier today. And the Brewers have also denied permission for the Mets to talk to their GM, David Stearns. So the New York Mets have won the Heisman not once, but twice this afternoon in that GM search. Fucking stiff arm you later. Jared.
Dallas.
I think I have found a way for you to start to dabble.
Ooh.
Start to dabble, just a touch. You know, we had your experience out in San Francisco on 420, and you thought you were in another galaxy.
Well, I had an out-of-body experience.
So you may have been in another galaxy.
Yeah.
But that's not your dad's grass.
No, it's not.
That's not your dad's grass. You were smoking some of Cali's finest, Humboldt's finest. But yeah. Dad grass, very different. Dad grass, first of all, street legal. Totally legal. It's organic, smokable hemp. Maybe you're not into eating things. Maybe you're not into the pouches. Whatever. Maybe you just like the idea of rolling something up, putting it in the air, which I am not here to deny you of your God-given right to do so. I'm just letting you know that you don't have to feel like you're taking a trip to outer space every time you do sit down to roll something up. This hemp right here, it relaxes your body, mellows the mind. It's 100% organic, pre-rolled, and these things, very, very, very low THC, high in CBD. So you can enjoy the effects of the CBD while keeping a clear head. And we have talked a lot about the effects of CBD here. So chill out without getting completely roasted if that's not what you're into. So it's kind of like, I guess it's kind of like having a glass of wine. You have a glass of wine? Great. Good evening. You have the whole bottle? Things are a little different. So this is kind of like just having a glass instead of the whole bottle or bottles. Keep them up. Fuckers rolling. All dad grass products are federally legal. I know that's a big, was it legal? Yes, all dad grass products federally legal for ages 21 and over. And it ships right to your door anywhere in the United States. So whether you're looking for a new buzz, just looking for a chill way to kind of relax, maybe even relax with dad, you know what I'm saying? Roll up a little dad grass. It'll leave you in a nice euphoric mood. Chill out, man. So right now, Dadgrass and us are offering you, our listeners, 20% off your first order when you go to dadgrass.com/starting9. That's dadgrass.com/starting for 20% off your first order. Again, that's dadgrass, dadgrass.com/starting9. Put it in the air. See this, Carabas?
Yeah, I was very excited about this. I probably retweeted it within 14 seconds of pass and breaking the news.
Minor league ball players are now going to have a place to live. Kind of.
Isn't that nice?
Hope so.
You know what was the coolest part about all of this? Because I was kind of – I had my concerns in a way. So I'm going to make a wrestling comparison, as I've been known to do. When the old school way, when wrestlers would come up, they would, you know, they would wrestle in the bingo halls and the high school gymnasiums, and they had to drive town to town in their little busted ass car and sleep in their cars, and they really had to earn it and things of that nature. And then WWE makes NXT, where they've got this state-of-the-art gym and this training facility, and these, like, it's basically everything that you need right at your disposal. And some of, like, the older wrestlers, like, well, that's not how I came up, and like they don't earn it the same way that we earned it. It's not a direct accurate comparison, because I mean, just having housing is the literal bare minimum. Like it's not like they have the state-of-the-art facilities or whatever else. But what I thought was really cool was the second that this news came out about minor leaguers now having housing provided by their organizations, I saw a lot of active major leaguers saying it's about damn time. Like, this is awesome that they're doing this. And I feel like that goes a long way, because I'm sure that maybe there are a few minor leaguers that are like almost feel guilty about taking it, where it's like, yeah, like, you know, like I want, when I come up, I don't want to be like the baby generation that was like handed housing. Like I didn't have to live in a fucking shack with eight of my teammates in a 2-bedroom apartment the way that this guy did. I mean, like, you know, I'm glad that some of the guys, like Whit Merrifield was one of the guys that I saw that came out saying some stuff, and you knew that you were going to get something like that from Whit. He's a stand-up guy. But yeah, I just think it was really cool that major leaguers were like, fuck yeah, like we're getting done for the next generation.
Well, and let's remember, well, while that sentiment, Jared, would be one that I would love to ring true wholly across the league, meaning that major leaguers are like, yes, we've gotten this done for. That's not true. Major League Baseball players on the whole haven't gotten this done for minor league ball players. So that's not fair to say, because that detracts, in my opinion, from the efforts of guys like David Price, who wrote a fucking check for everybody in the minor leagues to take care of these guys during the season in which they just weren't going to be earning money, right? And that happened across the game in a few spots, but not everybody did that. And this isn't a collective effort that's being supported by the MLBPA or the MLBPAA. That's just not it. There's been a lot of groups, you know, advocates for minor leaguers and a lot of folks who have created a groundswell of support for stuff like this to happen. One thing that you have to think about, or I just think gather perspective on, is to your point about not wanting to be a part of that class that was babied and handed housing and what I think older ball players or a ball player like myself might be hoping happens, though, is that you do take the time to listen to the stories. You do take the time to gather an understanding of what it's like to live life that way, still trying to achieve what you're trying to achieve now. And if there's an acknowledgement of that, then I think what the new generation will find is a group of older ball players who are here now to celebrate these guys having these opportunities, as opposed to looking down on them and talking shit on them like these pussy fucking kids can't find their own fucking housing camp. I lived with five fucking players in a one bedroom. Like, do you want me to, you don't want to hear that story in that way any more than I want to tell it to you. But what I'd love for you to understand is what that grind was like over beers, man. Let's chop that up. Like, are you willing to understand that and listen to that? Like, where do you think you figured out how to go and rent furniture and buy all your electronics from the places that had no questions asked return policies? From guys like me, motherfucker. From guys like me. And where did I learn it from? From guys that I was sat down by and handed these little nuggets of knowledge. This is how you're going to survive this life you've chosen. Okay? This is all I can do for you. I can give you these ins and outs. What you choose to do with them is on you. Well, we're beyond that now. That's an exciting thing. That's an exciting thing, because it also feels like for the first time, owners of major league organizations are realizing, and it's not that they're just now realizing, it's that they're kind of having their hand forced. Oh, we're going to have to start taking care of these fucking guys, because it's getting loud now. It's getting real loud. And you know what the next step is, Jared? Unionization.
Yeah, and I got asked about that too. Like, why don't they just unionize?
Because they're being appeased right now.
Right. And because they're being appeased, my first tweet when I saw Passan's report was, this is awesome. It's about damn time. Now pay them more. And then after I sent the tweet, my mind immediately goes to, oh, fuck, this is going to be a tactic that they use to not pay them more. It's like, well, we gave you housing. This what do you want from us? You want more money now?
I've been so far ahead of all of it. Like, if you've played minor league baseball and gotten to the big leagues, you still have friends that are kicking in the minor leagues trying to get to where you're at. And you watch the separation of class occur right before your very eyes. Like, it's now very clear. Like, if we're going to be hanging out and going on vacation and shit together from here on out, I'm going to be paying for you, because we can't go and do the stuff that we would have been doing together, because now I've got a little bit of change and we're not jumping in the car, me, you, and three of our other buddies driving 6 hours to the beach to rage. Now I'm chartering a PJ and you're coming too. And it's a different world. And so, guys, to get paid more now in the face of having this, like, you would start to feel like you're actually human as a minor league ball player. You would start to feel like, not only am I being taken care of and being afforded an opportunity to work these hours that I'm being asked to work, but at night I have a place that I can sleep. Just the fact that is something that is being like appreciated on the level it is it's sickening and grotesque. But when you think about the world we live in today, Jared, everybody's got a camera phone. Everybody has a platform. Everybody has a platform. Jared, you don't have to go to journalism school. You don't have to go to the Walter Cronkite School of Broadcasting at ASU. You don't have to go to any of these places to gain your platform these days. All you have to do is have enough money to buy a fucking smartphone. And from there, how you can navigate and create on platforms is up to you. And there's no real sense of earning it or earning a platform anymore, right?
Correct.
You don't have to go through those long hours, those arduous concessions that you have to make. Like, you'll either make them or you won't. And that's what the minor leagues in sport presents, is a very real-time, real-life scenario. What are you willing to give up? What are you willing to walk away from? how big of a sacrifice are you willing to make? Are you really from the mud? Are you really about that life? Will you really sleep in your car? Because on the other end of this rainbow, that pot of gold has you chartering a PJ with your homies to the beach instead of piling in that car. Are you about it? And the minor leagues presents that moment in time to make those decisions. Like, do I want to go out and drink away the 0-for-4? Or do I want to go back and sleep on my shitty air mattress, eating my peanut butter and jelly and fucking Taco Bell and hoping that that's enough to replenish me tomorrow so I can try to go out and go 2-for-4? Because the guy who goes 0-for-4 and goes to the bar, I'll pay for his fucking cab there. Because I'm going to sit home and I'm going to wear that offer because tomorrow that PB&J has got fucking Knox in it. That dude's Coors Light doesn't. But Coors Light does. I like Coors Light.
I love Coors Light. Well, shout out to the minor leaguers that are going to have housing now. It's big. It's big. So good on them. Also, really quick, they were talking about doing the streaming service. They would lift the blackouts. And I saw some people complaining, being like, oh, so I'm going to pay for MLB TV and then I have to pay more for the home games. It's like, isn't that what we've been saying all along? Is people are like, all right, I have MLB TV for all the out of market games, but I would gladly pay another $10 a month to be able to watch my own team. That's all this is. Like, you're getting what you fucking asked for. Of course, you're going to have to pay extra to lift the blackouts. Like, they're not just going to lift them. I mean, who knows if this even happens, because the cable companies, I'm sure, are going to have a fucking conniption over this. But
isn't
it's
this
about time if they do that too?
Isn't this the like most obvious revelation, though, and the most obvious answer to the question that people have been asking, I want to believe, rhetorically this whole time? But we know why games are blacked out, right? Because they got to figure out a way to make you pay for them.
Yeah.
Well, now that they're trying to figure out a way to make you pay for them, you're going to hopefully get your ball game. And it all, like, it's the world. Yay, capitalism. You want it, we got it. How much you willing to pay for it?
Yeah. All right, we'll see you in a few days. Dallas, can I get a Go Sox from you?
Whoa, what?
You picked them, right? You want to be right?
I did pick the Red Sox. Yes, I did. I picked them.
Go ahead, Go Sox. Just say Go Sox.
No, I don't. This is a setup.
Get a little Go Sox, Dallas.
No, I can't. I can't do that.
How about a little? Let's go Boston.
No, I would like the Red Sox to win. Have a great time today, Boston.
All right. See you in a few days. And you heard it from Dallas Braden. Let's go, Sox.
Wee-ow!